How porous is porous? Asks someone, is there any value in the structures we have that we want to keep? Well, I suppose I'd say yes to that. Except that I think porous means porous. I really think porous means porous. We have not been helped, I don't think, in our obsession with boundaries. Now, personal boundaries is one thing, and I believe in all of that. But I think in terms of deaneries and parishes, we have to get away from things that constrict us and constrain us. I've got loads of feedback. So my answer to is how porous is yes. How radical can we be in reimagining the structures of the church? Well, I think what I would, again, I am really worried about starting the debate with structures. I mean, one of the things I started with this morning was to try to get back to some fundamentals. And the fundamentals are, what kind of church does God want us to be? And how can we be that church? And I think we've been playing around with structures for far too long. That's been part of our difficulty, that we have thought that by tinkering with the structures, we're going to solve the problem. And I really don't believe that to be true. I mean, one of the interesting things about Diana Butler Bass and her book, which I can't now remember, Christianity After Religion. Now, it comes out of the Episcopal Church, so you kind of have to understand that. But she is saying the structures, whether we like it or not, of religion are crumbling. And they are crumbling. So she goes back to, what is it that people are looking for within our contemporary society? I think they are looking to belong. And I think belief and behaviour comes after that. I mean, one of the things that grieves me so much about the churches in our diocese, I suspect it's true of others. From time to time, my wife comes with me. Now, that is normally under sufferance, because I have to say, going round with a bishop to various churches in the diocese is not everybody's idea of fun, and it's not Liz's idea of fun. However, the interesting times are when she does come with me and how she's treated. And in most cases, it's pretty grim, frankly. And I was at a multi-parish benefice the other week and did the stuff, you know, that bishops are supposed to do, and did it with a reasonable smile on my face and some energy. And they said, oh, come into the hall for coffee afterwards. I went into the hall. Nobody talked to me. And I thought, who is the guest here? I'm a guest here. Come on, guys, get your act together. But no, they were huddled around in little corners talking to each other about, you know, what they bought last week or what they were going to buy tomorrow. Welcome and all of that. Belonging is so, so important. How hospitable are our communities? Sorry, I went off on one. How do you see the role of chapter regarding lay leadership? I think that is a really, really good question. I mean, one of the issues in our diocese, where we have currently 340 retired clergy holding permission to officiate. Yes, I know. Can anybody beat that by any chance? But there is an issue. There is an issue because retired clergy, those who want to be involved, want to be involved. But if they become part of deanery chapter, that skews the whole conversation in chapter. So there are issues around that. I mean, in some of our deaneries, they have what they call a greater chapter, I think, where they will invite readers, and that would be how they would identify lay leadership at the moment. But I wonder why we restrict ourselves to that. And I think there is an issue about how we identify lay leadership. But there will be an opportunity in some. But I mean, I guess practices will vary around the dioceses that are represented here. This one is associated. Should lay chairs be associated members of chapter? I think that is a very good question. I think that is a very good question, and I am going to take that back to my own diocese, because I think if we're serious about the engagement of lay chairs beyond the odd meeting, then we need to find ways of them engaging with the diocese in a more effective way. Let's do a bit of random roving mics, because I think I'm bored with the pieces of paper now. Can we do some Let's do some random microphones. We've got about 5 minutes. There's one over here, and there's one here.
Richard Letterman, Bromley.
And a Chelsea supporter, which is a nightmare.
Yes.
Hey, what a challenge.
But it's not a challenge for me.
Okay.
But when we were talking about the two questions, we got involved in quite a lot of discussion about some problems that there were that we had. And we found that we'd fallen into the trap of looking at the question two, if you like, of yours, about how do we shape our ministry, rather than looking at what kind of church is God calling us to be. And that actually, if we concentrated just on question one, perhaps question two wouldn't be as much of an issue, but we tend to jump straight to that
one. It's the easier option, isn't it? Mm. Thank you. I mean, I think that's a useful comment, very helpful comment. Over here.
Christina Chosun, Hackney Deanery. We in this group, we were very much interested in the book you showed us at the start that will describe the some of the duties of the lay chairs.
Okay.
And so how do we get a copy?
I've just been talking to parish and people man at the back. If you email the Diocese of Bath and Wells, I can email you a copy of the handbook. And would be delighted to do so. I mean, you have to understand that it is written specifically, but there will be generic things, hopefully, that may be helpful to you. So that will, I mean, whether we do it officially through the Parish and People Network or people want to email me, then that's fine. I am away for a week, so you won't get an immediate response, but we can certainly do that. Certainly do that.
There'll be something about it in the next Deanery Exchange.
But for those who can't wait, I'm afraid it's not got pictures.
Yeah.
But no, seriously, if you want to email me, then I'll make sure you get a copy.
Yeah, Phil Brown from St Albans Diocese. One of the things that we identified under question two was the need to welcome particularly newcomers into the parish.
Yeah.
And one of the things that came out of this. Clergy tend to establish links with undertakers. How about links with the state agents?
Well, I'm all for reimagining ministry in whatever way you see. Yep, there's lots of hands. Yep.
John Allen from Litchfield Deanery and Diocese. First Peter, thank you for being so honest with us. So refreshingly engaging, challenging. That's been really helpful, because I think you'll appreciate not all Episcopal visitors to us act as
really?
Honestly as you do. Absolutely. At our own table, we were exploring lots of things, as you can imagine, some of them including those things that create resistance to change.
Yeah.
One of the questions you very skillfully avoided, but now I'm going to actually ask you to attend to it, if you will, on the bit of paper, is what happens when some of the key areas of resistance actually come from senior staff?
Yeah.
It's a really big problem.
No, it is a big problem. I mean, we are very, very fortunate, and I would be the first to admit that. When the diocesan bishop came to Bath and Wells 10 years ago, he had a vision of the kind of team he wanted to create, and he has resolutely gone about that. I mean, interestingly, I think we are probably the only diocese in the Church of England where the diocesan bishop and the suffragan bishop have offices in the same building opposite one another. When requests come in for episcopal contact with parishes, they never ask for either one of us. They simply want a bishop. Now, I mean, it's taken us a long time to get to that point. I think the interesting time for us will be when our diocesan goes, how much are we going to be able to say, this is the ethos and culture of our diocese. If you as an incoming diocesan bishop are not prepared to sign up to it, we do not want you to come. Now, I mean, I think there, and that's replicated in parishes, let's be honest. It's replicated in parishes. You know, when you've built and created an ethos which you believe to be of God, how strongly are you going to say, well, I'm sorry, Bishop or Archdeacon, the person you are suggesting does not fit that ethos, and therefore we're going to say no. I mean, I think the whole notion of standing up to those who are inclined to, I hesitate to use the word bully, but that goes on too in our churches, and we know it well, you know, is an issue we have to deal with. So I honestly don't know the answer to your question, except that somewhere within senior staff, a vision has to be shared, owned, and delivered. Thank you. It's a really good question. It was on this bit of paper, and that's the one I avoided. One last one before coffee, I think.
Can I ask one, Bishop? I'm the late chairman of Southern Rydale in North Yorkshire.
Yep.
You talked about missionary groups and having responsibility under the Bath and Wells original plans for training and deployment and so on and so forth. How do those missionary groups differ from benefices? For instance, take my deanery. We have 40 churches, 40 parishes. Well, no, 40 churches.
Yeah.
We have benefices that range from 10 churches to one or two. Mm. Are we in danger, if we have these missionary groups, of confusing people even more with our structures than we are clarifying?
I mean, I would say for us, I mean, the reality is on the ground that in some large multi-parish benefices, they have been designated as a local ministry group, because we believe that within that group of parishes, there are the resources available to operate in that way. But in other situations where there are, for example, four or five disparate parishes which feel themselves to be isolated from one another, and cannot on their own resource themselves for whatever kind of shape of ministry and mission they have identified, then we ask the dean, I mean, we ask the deanery pastoral to look at your locality and where naturally would these groupings form. Now, I mean, if I was being brutally honest, I would say at the beginning of this process, we had a map which looked like this. 10 years on, we have a map which looks like that, because some of the groupings that were believed to be appropriate were discovered not to be. I think there has to be, I mean, I love that phrase that Bishop Alistair used last night of fluidity and flexibility. I mean, one of the reasons we have avoided going down the route of pastoral schemes is that if you do that, you're set in stone, and unpicking it becomes really, really complicated. If you build fluidity and flexibility, then you also have to build trust, because that's the thing that kind of goes with it. Thank you. I think I'm more than happy to carry on conversations over coffee if that's what folk want to do, but I do think it is time for a caffeine injection.
Says everything, and I don't need to say anything more, but I do think it's important, though, just to say, Peter, thank you very much. You've given us a lot to do to think about this morning and really stimulated our thinking. I would say, actually, Bishop Peter is a permission giver, and when you work in the diocese and you experience him saying, and the senior staff, try things, tell us about it, experience it, and come back to us. Actually, that's a really liberating place to be. And if other dioceses can pick up on that, it's amazing to see what change will happen. So we're grateful for your insight and your reflections this morning, Bishop, and And I know that that conversation will continue over coffee and over the next 24 hours. So thank you very much indeed. Thank you. Can I just say, sorry, go to coffee, but before you go to coffee, two people yesterday asked Peter in the corner, Peter Bates, about a book on conflict. He now has it if you want to go and talk to him about it. That's all. Thank you.